Welcome to Think About It, a podcast from Houston Baptist University here in Houston, Texas. At HBU, we empower our students so their beliefs can fuel their lives. We prepare our students to thrive at the university level and beyond. And now we join our host, Dr. Jerry Johnson, with today's guest.
I have looked so forward to have on HBU Think About It podcast, Dr. Michael Roquet Collins. He is an artist in resident for painting, professor of art, senior director of visual arts in the HBU School of Fine Arts, and he is absolutely a dynamo filled with passion. His art is primarily represented by the Llewellyn Galleries in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and has been placed in the permanent collections of more than 16 museums nationally. Dr. Collins' paintings have been awarded over 50 juried prizes and grants in peer-reviewed juried exhibitions worldwide. The publication, From Ruins to Resurrection, The Sacred Landscapes of Michael Roquet Collins, showcases some of his most treasured works. There's so much we can say about you. Welcome, man.
Thank you, Jerry. It's a pleasure and honor to be visiting with you about such a humble and exciting topic, though.
You know, when you think about a Texan game or an Astros game, I think about you on the pitcher's mound or at the 50-yard line, because I've been one of your biggest fans ever since I came to HBU, and the impact of your leadership has resounded all over our campus.
Thank you, sir.
I mean that.
It's fascinating and humbling to have to come out of a family of artists, mother and father, and aunt and uncle, all trained artists and all excellent artists, professors and scholars in their own right, and to humbly grow into that environment like Picasso did, with very caring and spiritually enlivened parents, thinking that art could connect to the spirit of the human being, to our faith, to the notions of love, and a sense of visual poetry, started very early. And I think that's what drove me to want to teach and drove me back, lured me in a good way, back to HBU after teaching at Sam Houston and Texas Tech and other schools. I wanted to learn how to do a master's program, but then do a better one. And sometimes one has to break something in order to let it grow. We learn that in our biblical lessons. Yeah. You know, Calgary, I mean, the whole notion of how we move from one state to the next. So birth, life, death, resurrection. My right. book is entitled that. So I think your point of this, and it is about enthusiasm. And again, I'm just honored, Jerry, to visit with you. And I know Dr. Sloan and others have always enjoyed your friendship and fellowship. And I'm glad we're getting to visit a little bit on this podcast, not just on the phone.
Absolutely. You know, HBU School of Fine Arts is like this diamond that is known all over the country, but sometimes you don't even know what you have. And I want you to tell us just what we have in the HBU School of Fine Arts.
Well, what I said earlier is absolutely the truth, Jerry, about art equaling love. You don't have to really, and although I do, read French philosophers. I mean, when you look at Sartre and Kierkegaard, the German, and other great writers, I think there's a sense of repetition that we need to tap into here. And it's not the repetition of cloning in one's own likeness, anything. I think that's hubris. And I think it really is misleading. And unfortunately, it's how many grad programs operate. I left HBU so I could come back and learn a few things that would make our MFA program that I always wanted to start. You know, James Busby and I talked about it in the early 90s. And finally, it came to fruition in the 2010 and 11 year to have a BFA and an MFA. But what I learned is that you've got, out of all these years, 45, I think, of teaching and art making, what I learned is you have to look for people that have hopeful attitudes. It's like Swindoll said, the preacher Charles up in Dallas. I've never met him, but I've heard his sermons, and he talked about attitude being 90% and 10% of the bad circumstances are good that we can't do anything about. It's what happens to us. So art is about taking in a look inside where the seeds that God places in our heart. And I don't care if you're open, and I wanted to create an MFA, BFA program that would welcome Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, Jewish, yeah, atheist alike, Christian, Protestant, I mean, Episcopalian, Methodist, Baptist, that the core of acceptance had everything to do with faith and trust that you could be broken, which we all are.
Right.
And that you could look at that tendency of brokenness and make something flower from that. I think in a way, good deeds are only good and valuable if you take them to heart, the empathy for others. It's not what I can do or what anybody else, what faculty can make in their own likeness. That's ridiculous.
Right.
What is important is to develop that seed, and everybody's seeds are unique and they're placed there by God. Yeah. So to say then art died at the Renaissance is a terribly mistaken assumption that some intellectuals utilize as saying the contemporary art, they don't give it credence. But I looked at it in a different way, like Dr. Sloan looked at art. And that begins how I started HBU's MFA program. And that is, if we look at the Bible and we look at lamentation, filled with woe and dread, right, brother?
Right.
The idea of Psalms, it's darker Hebrew poetry. So if we take that essential intellectual Hebrew poetry of darkness, and that was Christ's cradle of thinking, if we use that and run with that, that makes our own life worthwhile even when it's broken. That makes every seed of potential creativity worth watering and cultivating so that it too will bloom in season, proper season. So I think a graduate program, a BFA and an MFA at HBU is acutely aware and sensitive to the uniqueness of each of us, the love that Christ tells us to have for one another. And I think those are the real things that matter. And so we've collected teachers, faithful followers that hold the truth to be so, and that share that love in their heart with other students. And so therefore we pick people that aren't necessarily like us, because it's like the old Woody Allen quote of Groucho Marx from Plato, I don't want to be a member of a club that would have me as a member. But I think what HBU has done is it's allowed us to flower in proper season. It's allowed the love of water to be applied, of what if, to be asked of our students, so that everybody is different. And that's why you have people like Clinton Millsap and Ryan Batiste and Esther Delakey Baidu. You have faculty and grad student alike that have won the top premier juried exhibition, the Assistance League, that you can think of. Now, there's probably arguably five others, and I've been blessed to have won all of them. But the point is, peer review is only one thing. That's fine if you get it. But what about your grad students? What about your candidates? And when they start winning it year by year by year, that says to me that the broader secular community is understanding that HBU possesses, and I'll quote our art critic at the Chronicle, a certain palpable spiritual hum. How about that?
That's nice.
Palpable spiritual hum. That's how we're different than all the other programs that she knew about. And I think that's how you separate yourself while you still maintain your integrity of belief and what you want your student to encompass when they have their own beliefs. Is that making sense in a way?
It makes a lot of sense. And I mean, you guys have HBU School of Fine Arts is known by all the other schools because of this distinction in creativity. I mean, tell us about it.
Lovingly, Dr. Lozier, our former provost, used to tell me a joke when I first came to HBU. He said, well, Michael, if you think you're going to really teach just white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, you've got another day blooming. He goes, it's Hindu Buddhist University, HBU, for a good reason. And I lovingly say that because I love the kind of variety that we have.
Yes.
That love can be multicultural, multi-ethnic. So what I've sensed that when I have an African national student, when I have a Chinese student, when I have a Japanese student, when we have every form of Pacific Rim student, when I have American Native, when I have white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, when you put all those people together, that creates a bomb. And that's powerful. It's healing medicine, art is.
Yeah.
It allows the soul to show us the way. So it actually makes faith even more manifest when a person that's Hindu can start understanding Christ and understanding the love, not the judgment, but the love that we share that brings forth creativity. And that we could have light coming from darkness, like Dr. Sloan once preached and talked about Christ's cradle of thinking, the lamentation and Psalms, the woe and the dread and the darkness, giving a platform to make illumination more positive. So what we've expected of our grad students is that they be honest, they be unique, that they have a passion, that they approach their art making with a seriousness, but also with a sense of empathy for others. If they can approach that humility that's needed to really find their own seeds, then their artwork becomes even more significant, that it can possess basic attributes of ambiguity, which we've allowed to flower here. And it's, you know, my friends said at University of Miami and FSU and all these ASU, and we've had students from Carnegie Mellon and, you know, Rice and UT and A&M and Pratt and Stanford and UCLA, name a school. We have our MFAs come from U of H, all of those entities. And almost to an absolute student, they would say, this has been awesome. I'm crying, not because I'm sad, but I am, because I have to move out of the studio today. And we've created a family, and I'm not saying it's perfect, it isn't. I mean, I like to think I have a lot of exhibits with my work, and I'm working all the time for my paintings. And sometimes, you know, when you have 26 MFA students, you've got a very small nucleus of faculty that work with them, you can't get to everybody always as much, but you definitely have to try.
Right.
And so my form of criticism is, how do I get to more of them more often? And I think this digital media, you know, coronavirus is a plague, but we've looked at using the visual media a lot better than we ever used it. So now I can have students reach out to me and I can reach out to them during the summer, something we never used to do in the past,
right?
Before the virus hit us. So a negative has become a positive. One door closes, another one opens up. So what if? That's how I like to approach students. And if they don't give me their time, well, then there's the 25 others that need me. So I let it be the student's choice. But clearly, if you have an MFA degree, a doctoral program you're working in, a terminal program, we expect our students to work hard, to be dedicated. They can have jobs, they can have families, we hope they do. They can be active at their churches, synagogue, mosque, whatever. But that we want them to commit to their art making like they commit to their faith. And I think see those as symbiotic connective tissues. And I don't expect, and our faculty doesn't expect anything more of our student population than we expect of our own art. We're very critical. Nothing if not critical. Hannah Arendt wrote a great book called Life of the Mind. It's on my reading list. And basically, Jerry, as you well know, it's divided into thinking and willing. So when we take these two constructs and we look at it from a psychological perspective, Kierkegaard fits in quite well between Freud and Jung. I mean, if we have things spiritually directed,
right,
then guess what? There's always a higher power that's directing our humble human activities. So ego gets erased, but the true seeds left by the Holy Spirit are left for us to plumb. Plumbing the soul is art. That's what we have preached.
Well, you know, what I love about HBU is that we are a wonderful university that embraces the confessional statement that Jesus is Lord. But the barn door is wide open, whosoever will may come. I can't imagine being a Christian university and not only taking Christians. I mean,
it's unbelievable. But that's the problem of the perception. People think we're all Baptist, and nothing wrong with that. But the diversity within our faith is what makes us so global. And I want to shout it out. I want people to realize that we are not biased. We are not bigots. We have the love of Christ in our heart. We're welcoming. We're open. And that's why I came back and turned down a Big 12 tenure offer to be with Robert Sloan, to build something here that was enviable, that I'd have people writing me for University of Miami saying, how are you doing that at a Baptist school? And I'm going, well, because you got to believe. And if you believe, great things will come. And if you want it to happen and you work towards that faith and that belief, it's going to happen. And I want people to know, everyone to know, that coming to a school as we have is a blessing. And it needs to be undertaken at all levels of belief and of cultural assimilation and of ethnic diversity. This is the school for our future time. So it needs to stay healthy in our current time.
No question. You know, Dr. Collins, I mean, there's so many things you and I can talk about, but I do want to take a minute and talk about some of your own artwork.
Oh, boy.
Ken Marvel, the owner of Llewellyn Galleries in Santa Fe. You right now, you have 17 oils in progress.
Yes, sir.
The painting Transmissions of Light.
Yes, sir.
has been selected for a virtual museum exhibition in Germany that's set to open in August.
Yes, sir.
Ken Marvel, Bradley Summerall, senior curator of the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, and other curators are ecstatic about your latest series. Now, tell us what you've done in that regard and then others.
Yes, sir. Well, Jerry, when I started my art years ago, that I was trained by parents to be classically conscious. How do we form volumes? How do you understand the cone, the sphere, the cube, and the human figure? Then years of realism melted into expressive realism, which in turn, this we're talking about a 35, 40 year period here of art making, developed into a kind of a quirky narrative, cartoon sublime modality. And that is kind of continued on and off until even 2 years ago. But all of those shifts, and I call them like tides coming into a shore. Each tide, no matter if it's high or low, it brings a bounty to the shore. So every time I've been moved spiritually to attempt other voices that represent my dreams and my ideas, it brings bounty. And it's up to the artist, if we're talking about poetry, to decide what works really bring forth the soul, plumbs the soul in the most powerful and personal and maybe universal way. Oddly, we, in a personal activity, we want the most people to understand and to have a sense of empathy in what we create, right? So when one preaches, you want to communicate the humanity of our shared condition. And heavens knows we're in a splenetic era right now. So I think plumbing the soul is an accurate assessment if the soul connects to our shared human condition. So Transmissions of Light brings in all of these paintings through two possible portals, a connection about certain basic assumptions that I would say to you here, very, and not in art speak or theoretical speak, but let's break it down to where my grandchildren would understand it. And they're super bright. I mean, they frighten me. They're so intelligent. But basically, my art over the years into today has exercised two basic tenets. One, modernism that we're all exposed to, de Kooning, you know, all of the Abex people, Motherwell, Rothko, all teachers of my former teachers, they all held that in modernism, the mark, the dash, the hue, that would be, i.e. the color, certain aspects of a motion would have meaning to the viewer when they look at that work, that type of, you could call it abstract work of art. So I understand that, and I've used that in my work. But I have a second notion of interest that I want to share with you. And that's another thing is about a second motive that I have would be about using dream imagery, the land, if you were, in figures, and elements of abstraction, to talk about the human condition. So when we think about that, I'm interested in that aspects of spiritual longing and our shared human condition. But I'm interested in colliding those two realms together. So I guess I have always been called by those artists and writers like Edward Lucy Smith and some of the great art writers that are in England that have written about my work, humble artists living in Houston that shows in Miami, Paris, and Berlin, and Santa Fe. They saw my work in Santa Fe, and I think their comment was, is that my work is post-symbolistic in that it falls as a grandson would a grandfather of someone like Albert Pinkham Ryder, who was a preacher, by the way.
Yeah.
And he was the first symbolist of American painting. And he was alive. His work wasn't dead. He lived after Da Vinci, so I beg to differ and hold a pointed intellectual barb at that type of, I would almost say, a righteous indignation I hold for that type of misspeaking, because it really doesn't tell the whole story. Art had its turbulent times through pop and through its kind of hedonist era, but I think Albert Pinkham Ryder in the U.S. started what people like Goya started, and what after Goya, you'd have people, and before Goya, like around that time, like Turner, and you'd have those luminous like Odilon Redon, the French surrealist. And then you go up north to Blake, the great Christian artist of England, and John Mad Martin, who were actually the kind of visual parents of Albert Pinkham Ryder, who in turn is who feeds my early thinking about using a palette knife. So this new work could be described as a type of plumbing the soul that deals with both art about art and art about life and the human condition colliding. It deals with my dream imagery. It deals with aspects of spiritual longing. And it really revolves around three sets of opposition. You know, Jerry, when we are talking about poetry, it was a long day, it was a short day. It was a cold day, it was a hot day. When we think about poetry, Hebrew poetry, and we think about the Psalms, 23rd Psalm, yea, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I fear no evil. Shadow of death is pretty frightening, is it not? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Corona that we live now. It's kind of like the unknowingness that we have to deal with unless there was a light at the end of that tunnel. So art is the humble way that we are broken and become whole. Jerry, my art, Transmissions of Light series, really completely deals with really two avenues. One would be the notion of a sacred landscape. And I'm really assuming both portals, both avenues, respect the idea of a sacred land. In this series, however, some of the landscapes are more epic and more, I would say, with all humility intended, heroic, intentionally. Lifeline is one that you mentioned, which we may have had on the screen.
Right.
Which is a very personal painting that I've done once before in a different construct, a different composition. But the dream was about my son, my connection to him, wanting to save him in his youth. He was in a water in Adriana's pleasure pond in Tivoli that I visited in the dream, and I had a lifeline going down to him in the water. And so it was about a connection between father, son, or daughter. It was about providing that lifeline for a person to escape, to grow, to witness to their plight. Some of the paintings in Transmissions of Light use a kind of open landscape that's broad. Other paintings, which would be more like the charcoal that we sent in the packet to you, deal with a larger architectural edifice. And I believe that charcoal sketch was the first of several sketches that deal with the idea of the temple of virtues, but it deals essentially with the idea that architecture is a classical facade that's being overtaken by nature. That in essence, that nature is a punitive element, God's finger, if you will, of retribution, which is overcoming the hubris of humankind. And this is not necessarily a new concept. We could look at it in early Romantic German painting, Caspar David Friedrich or Kersting, or some of the great German painters that I also love, because they were dealing with heroic topics about the human alone in nature within God's light. They were fighting the unknown, the terrifying, the emptiness, the existential emptiness that Kierkegaard even refers to, but with a hopeful verdancy. So I think in a way, this transmissions of light may ultimately be a connection to my father's work, a connection to what I feel is important about light in the human condition, what I feel about hope, and about back again to those aspects of how I combine modernism, art about art, which is traditions of in the kind of more expressionistic, the Greenbergian era of abstraction, with the art about the human condition, which is what I feel about being poetic about painting now in our time. So I think that this series encapsulates hope, but the hope comes from these three opposing factors. One would be light emerging from a sense of darkness. You could also say eradicating. You could say overcoming, irradiating. It has to do with a hopeful verdancy. The second ambiguous structure would be figuration and abstraction, I think like freight trains colliding, because I love to drag abstraction into the equation of figuration. It breaks it up. It adds a sense of, well, I'll talk about that in a moment, of certainly mystery. And then I think the mythic, which I talked about a moment ago, the idea of a mythic landscape, fusing with a sense of the quotidian, the idea of the everyday. So when something is personal and mythic, it could be Sodom and Gomorrah's vision, our recanting of what that disaster scene looked like. The flood. I mean, we can almost think of any heroic scene which is filled with a certain lamentation, woe and dread, which is filled with a certain sense of the Psalms. And I think that, again, any light that would emerge from that construct would be even more powerful, right? I mean, to me, that's the power of poetry. It takes the, in word, it takes the cadence of the human existence in the South, like Faulkner, or like one of my favorite poets is Emily Dickinson, the great, great, you know, Victorian era, antebellum, put it under her, she was such a hero of mine. Much madness is divinest sense to the discerning eye. Much sense, 'tis the starkest madness. 'Tis as this, I'm paraphrasing. 'Tis as all prevail. Assent and you are sane, though demure, you are straightway dangerous and handled by a chain. So I think if we're humble and we allow destruction to enter our equation, if we allow these oppositional forces to hit together to cause sparks, we create a plumbing of the soul. We create a mirror into the human condition that may be tough to look at, but also is honest about where we are and how we can proceed further in faith. Because I think without it, it becomes totally arrogant. And with it, we become humble. We become lost in a sea of hopefulness. We want to utter what if to our grad students instead of you can't. We tell them yes, but how? I think the question is important. And I think that's what a great MFA program, that's how my mother taught me. You want to do that, son? Great. How are you going to do it? What is going to be your process? How is that going to be accomplished? Show me. I don't know. Show me for you how that looks right. So that's the criteria of teaching that Rachel Gardner, Carlos Canule, Tiffany Bergeron, Esther Delaki-Bedu, she worked with us for 11 years, amazing artist and teacher, Joel Stanulonis. You think of Kathy Bellew. We have a tremendous faculty, and those people have been selected. And I tried humbly to select wisely, but I'm on a committee each time. But we have surrounded ourselves with thinkers and believers and people who care about that they're not necessarily expert in, so that ingredients in the roux can be more flavorful, right, Terry? And I love Cajun cooking. Yeah. I'm Black Irish, but I love Cajun cuisine. And I think you asked me what are, it's the roux. It's all those people we've hired that have joy. They're joyous. They want to do things that are momentous, and they realize that they're going to be more powerful as artists by connecting themselves with the grad students that they say what if to. Not you're going to do what Michael does or I do. That's been done. I'm in this new series, I'm looking for at least two portals to discover new rooms.
We are talking to Dr. Michael Collins, the artist in residence for painting, professor of art, senior director of visual arts in the HBU School of Fine Arts, internationally known, so accomplished as an artist, and such a tremendous reputation in not only America, but in other countries, and a gift to HBU. I mean, you are truly a gift. And you've just listed the prestigious faculty at the HBU School of Fine Arts. I mean, it truly is. You have a cadre of people there. I want you to reach out to prospective students right now that are thinking about what art school should I go to, and HBU School of Fine Arts, why should I park myself there?
Well, Jerry, your company included in this prestigious and esteemed grouping of colleagues, but Dr. Robert Sloan is one of the most brilliant thinkers I've ever had the blessing and privilege to fly fish with. I've untangled knots with the man. I have let the big one get away. Not all of them, just one. And I think that when you have a person that the life of the mind, thinking and willing, is so curious, it makes you want to be curious, and it makes all the people that you have the chance to propose to him to be hired so curious. It makes what the little engine that could very probable. Right. So what I would want to say to people that are applying to HBU, look at our esteemed colleagues that just retired who still are going to adjunct with us. Jim Edwards, curator at the Menil Museum, helped with David Brower, who's also taught with us as a distinguished scholar. They did the Menil's Pop Show. They have written just numerous 40, 50 texts about Western art of the U.S. and British pop art and American art. Jim Edwards is still available. He's going to be adjuncting with us as the time goes by. And you've got Hans Molzberger, who's collaborated, still collaborates with me. He's going to be available in Germany for our students to go to his compound, which is Kiefer-like in its scope, and also study in Europe and have an ending culminating summer abroad to have a museum exhibition in Germany in the Altmark region. So I think the ideas are numerous. They begin at the top, which is Dr. Robert Sloan, and Jerry, you're with him. A tremendous empathetic group of thinkers, a tremendous student population, faculty that will give you their heart for days, that care about your art as much as their own. And the what if factor. If you're good now, what could you be if you learned to listen to what your heart is telling you that you might have denied in the past?
Yes.
Develop that with all due earnestness and haste and speedy consistency. And I think art has to do with patience. It's got to be what Rilke said, love, gestation, and perseverance. Those three things are at the core of poetry, of literary poetry, of poetic visual art. It's got to be those things which plumb the soul. And if a student wants to, if they've ever been told in an art program, oh, well, you're no good, or oh, your ideas are stupid, or I don't have time to teach you, that's dead wrong. And that is an absolute opposition, and not a good opposition, but maybe it's good because we're going to be just the opposite of that attitude. Now, it's hard to get in because everybody and their cousins trying to come to our program from places like Carnegie Mellon, UCLA, Stanford. I mean, we can only take a certain number of years until we grow much larger. But I will say, apply multiple times. If you don't get in the first time, apply the next year.
Right.
And do listen to the faculty because they'll tell you, unlike most grad schools, what you could do to get better or improve your work to a point to where you can take our idea brainstorming and take your art a step further. Does that make sense? So we're open, but we're realistic, Jerry, about what we need to have to help the student the most. So we're going to be looking for, and our MFA has to have a personal interview. We sit down and listen to the student. We question them. We want to know about what makes their art tick. Will they listen to outside ideas? And if we get a person who's joyous and open-minded and not completely closed in, we think they're going to learn from their students as well as their colleagues, their faculties. I want to have with grad students a joyous learning adventure. I continue to teach now, and I gladly came to HBU because of Dr. Sloan's leadership, and I turned down Big Ten offers of tenure. And, you know, I know Baylor's a good school, but I can be an artist in residence for Dr. Robert Sloan. And frankly, my buddy Umloth up at Baylor, he's a great artist in residence too, but I show in great galleries. I don't need to be living in New York. I can live right on St. Street and do the best I can do. And that may be almost good enough. Somehow I think I always need to work harder. But Houston has such a rich resource yes. of international stimuli. Our students come from all over the world. You interviewed Masato Yasui, and she's a great Japanese example. Greatest student watercolorist that, you know, one of our former chairs before James Busby was a man that Arthur Turner. And my dad hired him at Glassell before my father retired there as dean. And Arthur sent us his students. And Glassell, you know, their dean and directors send us their top water media and top oil painters. So I think that our reputation slowly, it takes a while to get known, is starting to grow where people are telling their artists are telling their students, go there, you'll be free to experiment with what you want, but you're gonna get what if asked to you. And you must be prepared to answer it. And I think that produces great work. Just tremendous art.
You know, this has just been unbelievable. Dr. Michael Roquet Collins with us today, the artist in residence for painting, professor of arts, senior director of visual arts in the HBU School of Fine Arts. 50 juried prizes and grants, Dr. Collins. It's just amazing what you have accomplished. And then I read that you have 16 different projects in mind or process.
They're ongoing. The two behind me are two that I've given you enlargements that you may have wanted to. I'll be happy if your time permits. I can tell you a little bit about some of them, but everything that I've said about that light coming out of darkness, a figuration colliding with abstraction, the idea of the mythic and the quotidian working in dynamic opposition. All of the works, the four or five that I've sent you, are images which reflect the human condition, but use nature as a continuing icon, or repeating icon, or in a, I think, a maybe a more broad sense, a repeating metaphoric sense, that really explain the human conditions that we all, human conditions that we all face. And that those are splenetic in nature. We're in a tough time right now. And I think art can reflect those powerful attributes of hope that we all have to share. So if my new series coming up when it's kind of completed in a year and a half could suggest as much to the viewer, I will feel blessed even more. And I will hope that and pray that those attributes are things the viewer will understand. If I've continued to learn from my grad students and my colleagues and my failures, because we all fail. And I think great art is art that you put up and you start them like a family. You may have 17 children, but if one's having trouble, you spend time with that one, but you're trying to do your best to make the whole level rise up, right? Right. And so paintings are the same way. I may start 17 and two or three may be in terrible trouble, but if I keep them around in eyeshot of the other ones that aren't having trouble, well, then there's a symbiotic relationship of what if, of brainstorming, of healing energy that may cause me to completely eradicate them and begin again, but hope springs eternal from destruction. And art is about healing. It's about destruction leading to the resurrective. It's about art leading to rebirth. And that whole sense of entropy is so vital at our university. HBU has a tremendous commitment through our eighth pillar to the liberal arts. Mm-hmm. And I think you could go to many universities, Jerry, but in I could have gone to any myself and ended up going to Southern Methodist University, not for the fact that it was a Christian institution, but because it was, it really had Bill Commodore and Alessandro Comini, two of the great art historians and painters that I knew of in Texas and this part of the country. So we go to a university, hopefully to study with one or two people that you know are renowned or that have some degree of learned capacities that they are willing to share with you. And so I think that I humbly would present that we're only as really strong as our next painting, our next show, our next learning adventure. So if I've learned anything, it's humbly given back to my students by the privilege of being able to teach. So blessings for HBU's art, because the university is allowing those that have retired to still stay involved and to bring their huge resource of knowledge back to the campus, even if it's remotely. But I think that there's a tremendous power of the history of that art that we can tap into.
I totally agree. Dr. Collins, thank you so much. I mean, you are a pure inspiration. Promise me you'll come back, talk to us some more.
And Jerry, thank you for what you're doing with my grad students. I will give you, when we're off air, a whole list of former MFAs and current teachers that you just won't believe how powerful they are. They're part of a long chain leak fence that it's the weak links are all made strong.
Well, Clinton Millsap the other day just raved about you and raved about the program. So hbu.edu, fine arts, check it out. And Dr. Michael Collins is here, there, and everywhere. We're going to follow him, and we're going to report back to you.
Thank you for what you're doing, Jerry.
Thank you. God bless you.
Here at HBU, we influence the culture around us by challenging our students to put their beliefs into action every day.